Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body.
Hi, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Network. Okay, well, tonight's topic is very interesting, very sobering, but we'll try and find a silver lining here somewhere. Today's topic is the modern face of syphilis. And this really is true. Doctors are instructed to ignore positive syphilis tests. And what I'm going to do is, first I'm going to share my experience with syphilis and my direct contact with syphilis, just to give you a background. And what really got me going, or made me decide to do tonight's talk, was somebody emailed me a document from 1881. The document came from the Harvard University Copley Library of Medicine, and it's written by P.A. Taylor, titled Current Fallacies About Vaccination. This show is not about vaccination. But there's something in this document that was very, very striking. And so that prompted me to piece together all these little pieces of things that happened over the past 30 years or so, 35 years. And it built a tapestry of the progression of syphilis, its continued existence even in modern-day society, and how it has been deliberately masked, deliberately disguised, and deliberately not treated so people can have an extended, prolonged course of illness throughout their lives and suffer tremendously. This is very, very interesting. Again, hey, their information, their numbers, my thoughts, as my emails have lately been signed, think happens. And so the purpose of tonight's show is to get you thinking and to get think to happen with you. Okay, so throughout my career as a doctor, I've actually been instructed not to test for syphilis. And if I would test for it, and if I do get a positive syphilis test, to ignore it. And this was really shocking to me. So first I'd like to start with how I first encountered syphilis. I was in college at Harvard. I was a bartender, and I had got promoted to being the assistant director of bartending in charge of personnel. So I would basically assign the bartenders to all their jobs. And so one day, I'd assigned all the bartenders and done the various paperwork and whatever, and the director of the agency said, oh, man, I caught syphilis. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I wonder what that could be. So I kind of was talking to the other guys, and I kind of got the gist of it. It was probably a personal or private thing. So I didn't think anything more of it. I was on my way to medical school. I figured, well, if I need to know more or whatever there is about this, they'll tell me in medical school. So I went to medical school. In medical school, they tell me that syphilis is the great imitator. And it's primary, and there's secondary, and there's tertiary. Man, oh, man, oh, man. It's a difficult, an awful disease, and it masquerades as almost anything in every other disease. Meanwhile, in medical school, I was also told about another disease called lupus. This is a mixed connective tissue disease. And I was told that lupus patients can have a positive syphilis test. And this is to be ignored because a positive syphilis test in somebody with lupus is, of course, a false positive. And it does no good to treat the false positive test of syphilis because, of course, it's a false positive. Now, at the time, and this is 1979 to 83, the people who had lupus were conspicuously of a very narrow strata, very narrow social and economic strata. They were exclusively, this was at the time, female, they were white, and they were middle class. Well, you know, maybe there was one African-American woman, but all of these women were middle class. They were all middle class women, upstanding women. They were devoted partners. They're all married women. And I'm like, this is really odd that an autoimmune disease would strike such a narrow spectrum of the population. You know, just women, not men, people who are employed in middle class, not the super poor, not the super rich. You know, what is this about this little, you know, since when does a disease strike an economic class? Very, very interesting. But again, I was 20-something, and I had incredible, extreme faith that this would be revealed to me. So then I graduated from medical school, and I went on to residency. And we had a patient who had lupus, and a test for syphilis was done on this person with lupus. And the doctor said, aha, the syphilis test is positive. A false positive syphilis test. This is proof positive. This person does indeed have lupus. Of course, I found this pretty confusing. A positive test for lupus is evidence that the person does not have lupus and instead has a different disease. I said, wow, this is really tough for me to follow. It's tough for me to follow. This is getting pretty confusing here. Of course, the logic of it never did sort out. No one ever explained to me how having a positive test for one disease could mean that you don't have that disease and that you really have another disease. Of course, these lupus individuals did have lupus antibodies. And that would be ANA test. There are patterns. There's speckled and all kinds of other patterns. But that's really not pertinent tonight. What is pertinent, though, is the use of a positive syphilis test as a sign not to treat. That is so amazing. So that's really the extent of my encounter with syphilis. Did I ever in my career find a positive syphilis test worthy of being treated? The answer is no, because, of course, I always say once I got into private practice, I never did a syphilis test because you only do a syphilis test if you have a sexually active person who has a sore on their genitals, you see. Sores other parts of the body, well, that's no reason for a syphilis test. So it went. And I'd like to suggest to you that, you know, your doctor might have gotten a similar type of training or education to simply don't do syphilis tests. Why do them? Because if they're positive, well, what are you going to do? Just going to ignore it anyway. It's probably just autoimmune disease. So that's my experience. Let's go back and let's look at some objective information. When I say objective information, I mean information that I didn't write, information that I didn't come up with. So let's go all of that to 1881. That's always a nice place to start. Usually if you start far enough in the past, you can remove passion and bias from the discussion. So again, we're going to look at this document from Harvard University, Conway Library of Medicine by P.A. Taylor, page 28, in case you decide to go look it up. And somebody says, you must surely have heard of the famous D'Orsia case, where 29 children out of 38 vaccinated were thus infected with syphilis. In the case of Prüm, Germany, there were 30 children infected in a terrible way. And so it has been reported by the French papers that 58 French soldiers in Algeria were syphilized by inoculation from a single infant. There can be no doubt that the danger of transmitting syphilis is a real and very important one. There are numerous cases on record to prove that the vaccine virus, that would be the smallpox vaccine being discussed here, and the syphilitic virus may be introduced at the same spot by the same puncture of the vaccinating lancet. Okay, so we have back in 1881 syphilis being spread to more or less 79% of these kids, 29 out of 38 vaccinated in this one case, infected with syphilis. And they go on to say that this syphilis went undetected in the children and was showed up around 8 to 10 years of age, and at that point was diagnosed as congenital syphilis, which was, of course, missed. Very, very interesting. And so we have here in our children in the United States, we have all kinds of mental things, ADHD and such, that are being diagnosed around the age of 8 and 10, and sometimes even earlier. So this is a beginning starting place. So even here we see in 1881, this is in England, the transmission of syphilis through the vaccination process was concealed. It was covered up. So even though it was known that the vaccines were transmitting syphilis, the children were instead diagnosed as having had congenital syphilis, and of course their parents were blamed of being irresponsible in communicating syphilis to their children. And here we have also more documentation in this document. It's in France. In France, the chief of the National Vaccination Service clung less closely to this theory, the impossibility of communicating syphilis. He saw the danger much earlier and in 1867 published a list of 160 cases of syphilitic infection through vaccination, which had been brought under his notice in little over a year. This is 1881, not exactly a huge population. And so this is a big, big deal. Okay, so we've got a possible etiology of this syphilis. Do we have any suggestion that the syphilis and lupus might be one and the same? Well, if you believe in lab tests, a positive syphilis test being associated with a lupus test might be convincing for you. Of course, the medical profession, I won't say they don't believe in their own tests, but they conveniently dismiss them. So if we say that the syphilis test is valid, then the fact that the syphilis test tends to be positive in people who have lupus, assuming a suggestion the two diseases might have a lot in common. Now, let's take a look at what the .gov site lets say. This is a medical site about optometry and syphilis and the stages of syphilis. Now, it turns out that in medical school, we were told very sternly that syphilis is the great masquerader. It can be anything. It's everywhere. You could miss it. And so what do they say here? They say the great masquerader, yes, just like you said in medical school. And it says there's eye manifestations, sexually transmitted disease, known as a great masquerader, presents itself much like any other inflammatory disease. Perplexing practitioners who are not trained to look for it. syphilis is associated with ocular diseases such as keratitis, scleritis, iritis, iris papule, chorioretinitis, papillitis, retinal vasculitis, and exudative retinal detachment. Aha! Interesting. And so that's a lot of diseases. Those of you who are medically inclined and medical relatives, we're talking about basically anterior and posterior eye diseases. Yes. And the bottom line is you should always keep syphilis in mind as a diagnosis, especially if you've run all tests and don't know where else to go. And here they say stages of syphilis, the primary stage of syphilis, is usually marked by the appearance of a single chancre sore, but many sores may appear. The time between infection with syphilis and the start of the first symptom can range from 10 to 90 days, average of 21. Chancres usually firm, round, small, and painless. Appears at the spot where syphilis entered the body. Chancre lasts up to 6 weeks, heals without treatment. However, if adequate treatment is not administered, the infection progresses to secondary stage. And it's a secondary stage that is indistinguishable from and often identical to lupus. So let's read this. Secondary syphilis is skin rash, mucous membranes, lesions characterized by the secondary stage, typically start developed as a rash on one or more areas of the body. Rash does not cause itching. Associated with secondary syphilis can appear as a chancre. Is healing in several weeks after it's healed. The chancre rash may appear rough, red, or reddish. Brown spots both in the palms, hands, thumbs, and feet. However, rashes with a different appearance may occur on other parts of the body, sometimes resembling rashes caused by other diseases, and rashes associated with secondary syphilis are so faint that they are sometimes not noticed. In addition to rashes, symptoms of secondary syphilis include fever, swollen lymph glands, sore throat, patchy hair loss, headaches, weight loss, muscle aches, and tiredness. Signs and symptoms of secondary syphilis will go away with or without treatment, but without treatment, the infection will progress to the latent and later stages. All right, so, well, why don't we take a look at the description of lupus and see what the lupus people have to say about lupus. Well, lupus is hard to diagnose. It is often mistaken for other diseases. For this reason, lupus has been called the great imitator. That's very similar to the great masquerader now, isn't it? The signs of lupus differ from person to person. Some people have just a few signs. Others have more. So let's listen to the lupus signs. Painful or swollen joints. Unexplained fever. Red rash or color change in the face. Chest pain, deep breathing, swollen glands, extreme fatigue, unusual hair loss, and the scalp, pale or purple fingers or toes, sensitivity to the sun, low blood count, depression, trouble thinking, and other memory problems. You're getting into tertiary syphilis there. So basically, this list of symptoms for lupus is more or less identical to the symptoms for syphilis. Very interesting. Now, this is a very nice, very well done, National Institute of Health, NIH, National Institute of Health, Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Diseases site. Very, very interesting. And they tell you to talk to your doctor. What causes lupus? Oh, we don't know what causes lupus. There is no cure. But in most cases, lupus can be managed. Lupus sometimes seems to run in families, which suggests the disease may be hereditary. I guess so. Sexually transmitted, wouldn't it be? Having the genes isn't the whole story, though. The environment, sunlight, stress, certain medicines may trigger symptoms in some people. Other people who have similar genetic backgrounds may not get signs or symptoms of the disease. Researchers are trying to find out why. Anyone can get lupus, but we know that many more women than men get lupus. And African-American women are 3 times more likely to get lupus than white women. It's also more common in Hispanic, Latino, Asian, American Indian women. And again, when it was first discovered, it was basically a middle-class white woman's disease. What we're now seeing, since vaccines are being made more widely available, the demographics are all over the place. They also tend to have more severe diseases than whites. For example, and so you have all this kind of racial medicine going on here, implying, of course, that blacks, whites, and Latinos are somehow different. Now, this is very interesting. So what about treatment? There's no cure, but there's treatment. What can they do to treat you? Why, of course, there's prednisone, which helps suppress your immune system, and it takes a self-limited disease and makes it permanent. It makes it extensive. So if you read the syphilis, what says secondary syphilis, which is the same list of symptoms as lupus, will go away if you do nothing. But if you give someone prednisone, what's going to happen? It's going to stay. You have this person trapped in this secondary syphilis stage. Now, so what else? So we've got here the confluence of syphilis and lupus. In other words, the similarity is overwhelming. The list of symptoms is identical. So what makes me think that there is any possibility that lupus could be related to syphilis in a deliberate, premeditated kind of way? Well, again, let's take another document. Their number is not mine. In the year of our Lord, 1930-something, everyone knows about the infamous Tuskegee experiment, where many African-American men were even infected with syphilis, deliberately not treated, and followed for decades, up to 50 years as a matter of fact, with their syphilis deliberately untreated. Now, there are those who say this was racist. My personal opinion, it was absolutely not racist. First of all, they approached the Black Medical Society, the National Medical Association, and the National Medical Association, black doctors, all black doctors, said, we will help with this Tuskegee experiment. We will participate with this experiment. We will support this experiment. We will help monitor these African-American men while they are untreated with syphilis because, of course, we want to add to the body of medical knowledge. And then, of course, you had the United States government in on it, NIH. And so this Tuskegee experiment was going on. They were observing people with untreated syphilis. 22 years into the program, what happened? 22 years into the observation of the Tuskegee experiment, they got so much data, it was so good, that what did they do? They discovered lupus. Yes, they discovered lupus right in the midst of the Tuskegee experiment. So the study started in 1932, and 22 years later, in 1954, the first case of lupus was diagnosed. And so what happened then was the information gleaned from the black males in the Tuskegee experiment was actually used to deploy what could be perceived as biological warfare against the whole population of the United States. And so this was really shocking. And so syphilis being known as a great masquerader, they had all the symptoms and everything. They knew what syphilis was. They just simply rolled it right out, boom, boom, and gave it a name, calling it lupus, which means wolf, by the way, mark of the wolf for the rash on the face. And it just took off from there. And in order for it to work, of course, you have to have the posture, the lupus posture, which is no cause, no cure, no controlling symptoms, and then what do? Suppress the immune system to make that second stage of syphilis last even longer. And so now that becomes perpetual. And So in lupus, and one thing that really piqued my interest with my lupus patients was it seemed to me it was clearly infectious. People would get a low-grade fever that would come and go. They seemed to be deteriorating over time. There's something eating away at them. And they were just gradually being consumed. And so there was something more than just a human immune system at work. And this, again, I was content because the whole system to me as a medical doctor when I was practicing medicine was very confusing, very confusing. So I made up my mind I would leave lupus to the experts. And so I would just send all my patients who had lupus, just send them to the rheumatologist and let him, sort this out, figure it out. And one day, this African-American male, of all things, men don't get lupus in such great numbers, but this guy had lupus, and he had the patchy hair falling out, and he had every single lupus symptom you could think. He had the mental problems. He was depressed. He had mood swings. And another doctor put him on an antidepressant. So he came to me on an antidepressant. Like he was on steroids, maybe he had stopped him because he was just so exasperated. And so he came to me and he said, I just want a complete physical. I said, that's an odd request. Well, okay. So I did a complete physical. So while I was doing a complete physical, he says, well, as you can see by my records, I have lupus. I said, uh-huh. Well, we can send you to the specialist for that. He said, no. No, I don't want to go see the specialist. I've been to the specialist for quite some time. He keeps giving me prednisone, and I'm getting worse. And so I don't want to go see the specialist. I said, well, what would you like me to do? He says, I don't care what you do. I want you to do whatever you can do to help me. I said, oh, okay. And so I said, well, I'm not an expert. He says, that's okay. I'm through with experts. And so this guy had every single lupus symptom, pretty much. And what I did with this person, we took his diet, put him on all natural food. In other words, just plain food. He didn't buy anything that was mixed, chopped, prepared, or assembled before he got his hands on it. Now, his wife, bless her heart, was a famous writer and poet. And she could not see the sense of all this natural stuff. So he was on his own. So he put together his own food from scratch. But his wife being a famous poet and writer, of course, they had all these people that would entertain the house and, a very, of course, broad menu. And he was, of course, in charge of the grill. And so he confessed that from time to time he would have a hamburger that would be about once every 2 weeks he would have a hamburger. And he progressed. There were some ups and downs in his progression. We put him on a few vitamins and had him, of course, clear out his bowels. And over time, he got a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And one day he came to me and said, Doc, I want to run a 10K marathon. Do you think I can do it? And I said, well, Mr. Jones, of course you can. You're getting better and better, and I think you should just, you build up to it. Maybe start with a quarter mile, just work your way up. He said, okay, thank you. What I didn't know was that he had discussed this with his wife, and she said, absolutely not. You're too frail, you're too sick, and you'll never run a marathon, and don't even think about it. Just keep going to work. So as we worked together, his work attendance got better. He got to where he missed no days at work. Finally, around that time, actually, I bumped into turpentine. And so I said to myself, you're really doing pretty well here. I mean, not totally better, but, you're a lot better. His hair stopped falling out. Patches started filling in. I said, I want you to take some turpentine here. He said, okay, no problem. He's very eager. And so he started taking turpentine, and he got better and better and better. And he did run his 10K marathon. And in the 10K marathon, who did he encounter but his rheumatologist? His rheumatologist saw him and nearly passed out. He said, oh, my God, what are you doing here? He He said, I'm running a marathon. And he said, oh, my God, how'd you do that? And he says, I see Dr. Daniels. So he was very proud to be able to show his rheumatologist that he could get better. And he's done very well, and he's still alive today, symptom-free, living a normal life, and free of lupus. And so that's that piece. Now, what about the other piece? Let's say lupus and syphilis are identical. I mean, certainly the symptoms are absolutely identical. These are descriptions from the NIH.gov website. And they're very clear that, you know, the symptoms are really no different at all. And, of course, they tell these unfortunate lupus people to prevent a flare by learning to recognize when it's coming, talk with your doctor, set realistic goals and priorities, limit the time you spend in the sun, maintain a healthy diet, develop coping skills to limit your stress, get enough rest and quiet, exercise moderately when possible, and develop a support system. Of course, my patient, he was the only working person in his family. I mean, his wife worked, but it was his income that was extremely necessary. And so this information for him was, like, totally useless. Now, let's talk about syphilis treatment and diagnosis. This is going to really shock you. But first, I'm going to do that. I've got to talk about the stages. So we talked about a secondary stage of syphilis, which is almost identical to lupus. What about the latent stage, like tertiary syphilis? Well, you get blindness, deafness, and mental illness, and memory loss. These are things that in our culture we equate with simply growing old. People get blind and lose their sight. They get deaf and they lose their memory. All right, got it. And there's also destruction of soft tissue and bone and neurological disorders like a stroke. So we have people taking aspirin a day to prevent stroke when maybe they could just get rid of their syphilis. How about that? And heart disease is a symptom of tertiary syphilis. And neurosyphilis, which would be spinal cord infection, and, of course, ultimately death. Now, tertiary syphilis is rarely fatal. I've checked a few other samples on the Internet. And so syphilis does not shorten the lifetime by very much. What it does do, though, is it makes it pretty darn miserable. Okay, so how is it diagnosed? If you think you have syphilis, see your doctor as soon as possible. That's to take a blood or urine sample to run tests. We don't do urine samples for syphilis. That's ridiculous. But we do blood tests. And if a sore throat is present, your doctor will take a sample from the sore throat to determine if the syphilis bacteria are present. And so for tertiary syphilis, you need a spinal tap. That's no fun. And spinal fluid is collected so your doctor can test for bacteria. Now, syphilis, as you can see, in 1881 was called a virus, and here it's being called a bacteria. Syphilis is a corkscrew-shaped organism, and when you look at it under the microscope in dark field, it actually twirls. It twirls. It's kind of a greenish-yellow color. Okay, treating and curing syphilis. So we do a blood test for syphilis. Of course, there are many blood tests for syphilis, and syphilis can be isolated and can be cultured, and that's the only way to totally identify it. Obviously, we had this talk before with our Ebola discussion. Once you get into antibody tests, they're unreliable, they're inaccurate, and once the antibody test is positive, it really doesn't go back to being negative, because all the antibody test means is that your immune system has encountered whatever the organism may be and has prepared itself to encounter this organism again via antibodies. So antibody test is not a test for the presence of something. It is a test that something has been there or something like it has passed through. So what's the treatment? Primary and secondary syphilis, easy to treat, a penicillin shot. It's one of the most widely used antibiotics. It is, get this word, usually effective in treating syphilis. That means it's not always effective. But people that are allergic to penicillin would be treated with a different oral antibiotic, such as tetracycline, which, again, is not always effective. Neurosyphilis sufferers will get daily doses of intravenous administered penicillin, brief hospital stay. Damage caused by late syphilis cannot be reversed. Bacteria can be killed, but treatment will most likely focus on easing pain and discomfort. In other words, palliative, symptomatic. And during the treatment, avoid all sexual contact until the sores in your body are healed. The doctor tells you it's safe to resume sex. If you're sexually active, your partner should be treated as well. You should not resume sexual activity until both of your treatment is complete. Now, we know from our observation of lupus that at the point that these people are getting this syphilis, it's not considered to be contagious. So, you know, we're not saying to a woman with lupus, oh, we need to treat your husband. Again, if the woman got the lupus from a portal of entry other than her sexual organs, let's say an injection, then the organism would not be hanging out in her sexual area. In other words, would likely not be transmitted sexually. Okay. That's my deduce. I'm deducing that because my observation has been that partners are not getting infected. All right. So now I'm telling you to prevent syphilis, avoid having sex with multiple partners, use a dental dam or condoms during oral sex, avoid sharing sex toys, and get screened for STDs, infections, and talk to your partners about their results. Okay, so this, again, is totally... this particular information about preventing syphilis when you're into the secondary or tertiary phase is not especially useful. Okay, and the risks and complications are a lot. Okay, babies born with congenital syphilis. Again, take a listen to these and see if this in any way relates to vaccine damage. Death, developmental delays, call it autism if you want to, seizures, rash, fever, anemia, jaundice, and sores. Right, exactly. Sounds like this stuff is pretty prevalent. And so when should you get tested for syphilis? This is interesting. If you've had unprotected sex, if you're pregnant, if you're a sex worker, exchange sex for drugs, in prison. Ah, in prison. Interesting. If you had unprotected sex, so this is all sex, 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 right? So if I'm a doctor and I have a person who has none of these sex, 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 sex things, then I'm not going to check for syphilis. No, of course not. I don't care what their profile looks like. And again, as doctors, we are told don't check for syphilis. And if you find it, it must be something else. Very, very interesting. And then we've taken this pejorative view towards syphilis and what might be causing it, and then leaving it untreated in the population. Now, again, the antibiotic intervention with syphilis is absolutely not 100% effective. That's what I found really shocking. I was like, oh, my God, syphilis, no problem, man. Just pull on the penicillin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no. It doesn't really work that way. All right, we're going to pause here. We have a question. Ah, it's clicking. Oh, there we go. Hi, you're on the air. What's your name and what's your question? Hello? Okay, so... This to me was really shocking. And so the real importance of the Tuskegee experiment was that it laid the foundation for a whole medical industry of autoimmune diseases. And this is absolutely amazing. Now, there are those of you listening saying, oh, my doctor, that bad person. No, your doctor didn't make the rules. Your doctor didn't lay down the rules of what is lupus know, that was handed down from some anonymous authority. Whether it's the, you know, no one really knows who writes the standard of care in medical school. No one really knows who's writing the curriculum. Although, I will say, if a lot of the medical books, you open them up, they were written by drug companies. So there is a, you know, there is that input. So these doctors are being trained in medical school to ignore syphilis. And they're trained to take diseases that are just for all the world identical to syphilis and treat them with prednisone, which can only make the syphilitic disease worse and even more extensive. And then, of course, the doctors are trained to give prednisone, something that suppresses the immune system, frequently and often. And so what we have in our country now is we have Alzheimer's, something that's now killing 95,000 people a year, when, you know, 50 years ago it didn't even kill 5 people. And so what we have then, to my observation, is another indication of an explosion in what we can call tertiary syphilis. And this is something I think needs to be investigated, you know, on a grander scale, in case anyone's interested. It might be worth testing vaccines to see if they indeed do have syphilis in them. And it may be worthwhile to screen people for syphilis, not with the eye to treating them, but at least with an eye to understanding how much syphilis is really out there. When I say not treating them, what I'm saying is apparently we don't really have treatment for syphilis that's effective. We have the big penicillin blush, so to speak, but if you read the accounts on the internet, for example, they are very clear that at whatever point you treat syphilis, let's say someone has Alzheimer's, it does not reverse the losses due to Alzheimer's. So any progress in treating or reversing syphilis would have to lie in the natural area, because medicine has already admitted that there is no hope there. So what I think needs to be done is these diseases that are identical to syphilis, that we need to take a posture towards these diseases that syphilis may indeed be the cause, in which case any attempt to suppress the immune system is contraindicated. That's a fancy word for a medicine, meaning it's a bad idea. It could make things worse. So the whole construct of suppressing the immune system to promote the healing of the body is one that instead is promoting a disease and a whole industry. I have a question here. Hi, you're on the air. Your name and your question, please.
Hi, my name is Nikki, and I had a question about, okay, my daughter has lupus, and she's currently on Plaquenil, which I understand is not, it's not the same thing as suppressing the immune system to treat the lupus. Is that, I guess I have two questions.
Well,
one,
it doesn't
is,
help the immune system, put it that way.
She's only taking it because she wants to rid herself of joint pain that they're saying is because of the body attacking the joint. And I was wondering if she were to get penicillin for any other reason, would it, and I mean, would, could she bypass getting tested for syphilis?
No, because the dose of penicillin you need for syphilis is way different from the dose that you need for anything else. So you would not have access to that penicillin dose without being tested for syphilis. But even if her syphilis test did come back positive, again, her daughter, her doctor has been instructed that anyone positive for syphilis is, I mean, for lupus is going to have a false positive syphilis test, and the positive syphilis test only confirms her lupus. It does not indicate she has syphilis. That's the teaching.
So how do you get how do you get the how do you get around that?
Just go in circles, right? You know, what she's taking now, Plaquenil, is a quinine, and that's actually an anti-parasite agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, in a mild way, does influence her lupus. So the mechanism whereby that works is that it kills or lessens the viability of the syphilitic organism and lessens her joint pain there. So what I would recommend is that she go a totally natural route, that she diligently fix her diet, you know, clean out her intestines, and, you know, my favorite is turpentine, but, you know, whatever anti-parasite agent she wants to use. But that is what I would recommend. I have been absolutely stunned with my patients who have just walked away. They just walked away from the lupus treatment because they couldn't take it anymore. And that's how I first got into it.
So is the joint pain a thing that would go away if she were to resolve all these other things, or is that indicative of damage already done?
It would go, with the natural route, it's been my observation, it goes away.
It goes away. Okay. And then with the turpentine, she tried the turpentine.
Uh-huh.
We tried the turpentine for, I think, a week or maybe 2 weeks. And she said it didn't, you know, but she hadn't fixed all the other things.
Right. You had to fix all the other things first. Yeah.
How long for somebody with lupus would you expect them to be on the turpentine biweekly?
Well, another question would be, how long for someone with lupus should they spend fixing the other things? So lupus people generally have to spend anywhere from 1 to 2 months fixing the other things.
Okay.
So once they spend at least 2 months fixing the other things, then they'll be on the twice a week for like 6 months.
And then at the end of that, would they be able to eat whatever again?
I don't recommend a raw food diet. They would generally liberalize their eating somewhere around, say, month 3 or 4.
Huh.
But it's a creepy thing. You have to go little steps. If you liberalize too much and you have a backslide, okay, fine. All right, I guess I overstepped. And you have to be patient, allow your body to heal step by step by step.
So how quickly do you imagine somebody with severe joint pain would start to feel relief if they were to be compliant on this plan?
But they're going to be diligent. They usually experience improvement within weeks, within, you know, two or three weeks, the joints, you know, the joints respond. But again, you have to fix the other things first. You can't be lazy. You know, you can't say, oh, I just want to reach for a trip. Yeah, it doesn't work. We're coming out with another addition, an update to the Candida Cleaner protocol. So that's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks. And if you're on my list, which is go to the website, drjenniferdaniels.com, click on About Me. There's a box in the upper right corner. Just fill in your name and email, and you'll get notices of these radio shows as well as when the next edition is going to come out.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so yes, it is a do-it-yourself thing because the doctors are, you know, they've got their orders. There's a standard of care there. It's got to be upheld. And that standard of care means that people with lupus, you know, we're all playing, you know, let's pretend here. Okay, so let's look at the chat room. Okay, we have got activity in the chat room. Dr. Daniel, do you think there's any such things as a sexually transmitted disease? In other words, can a healthy person contract a disease through sexual contact with an infected partner? This is a good question. I think another question might be, or another way of putting this is there a sexually transmitted disease that's 100% infective? In other words, if someone is having sex with someone, has a sexually transmitted disease, we'll call it syphilis, and they have sex with someone else who does not have it, Chances are good that second person will not get syphilis. Why? If there's not an open sore in the genital area, then the second partner doesn't stand to get syphilis. Which might explain why these people with lupus are not infecting their partners. So, and let's take a look at another sexually transmitted disease, gonorrhea. And gonorrhea, this is from medical school, we taught this in medical school. If you have someone who's infected with gonorrhea and they have sex with 10 people, only 6 of those 10 people will get infected. The other 4 will not get infected. And so then it appears that there's something to do with the property of the uninfected person that determines whether or not they're infected. And so I think that there are factors involving the transmission of these conditions, and the problem is that no research has been done on that. That just has not been looked at, and for obvious reasons. I mean, if people could understand how to protect themselves from sexually transmitted diseases without use of condoms, well, where would the condom sales be? All right, we've got a couple more questions here. Hi, you're on the air. Tell me your name and your question, please.
Hi, my name is Barbara, and my question is, I have not heard you speak about syphilis and the relationship to Lyme disease. Can you elaborate on that? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, that's another part. I actually did a whole show on Lyme disease. I think that the whole show on Lyme disease really kind of tells a story. And yes, it is possible that Lyme disease could be simply another variation of syphilis. One thing is for sure, it's very clear, that Lyme disease has nothing to do with ticks. It has nothing to do with Lyme. But, I mean, people are obviously sick. They are sick. There's no question they're sick. But if you look at the epidemiology of it, people are getting Lyme who have never encountered a tick, who don't live anywhere near deer. And so the epidemiology, the story that people are being told is simply not holding up. These people are sick. They are suffering. And it's a good chance that it could be syphilis. But one thing I'll tell you for sure, it definitely is infectious. And the question is, where is the infection coming from? The answer would be common source outbreak. In other words, these people who are having these Lyme-type symptoms are getting them, all of them are getting them, from the same place. And the challenge is to find out where is that place. It's not a person-to-person spread thing. And this is another thing that happens with the medical industrial complex when they fabricate or design diseases. I call them designer diseases. They design the same disease, syphilis, lupus, Lyme. And, okay, if you have Lyme, create a category called Lyme, and these people live in beautiful homes next to wooded areas. That means that they have a higher income, basically. So we're going to put them in the high-cost, expensive antibiotics forever category because we know they've got deep pockets. They can reach into their pockets and buy these antibiotics. Then they're going to destroy their body with the antibiotics. Then we've got them on a real treadmill. So the Lyme syphilis connection is definitely there. The important thing to understand about Lyme disease is what has happened is they've taken a bunch of symptoms, they've put them together. These symptoms do have a cause. The cause is definitely not the tick. And that's the best way to look at it. The solution, you know, I have had people email me about turpentine curing their Lyme disease. So that is definitely something that does work. Again, like the previous caller said, you know, she tried turpentine, it didn't work. No, because she didn't do anything else. So stay tuned, definitely, for the update in the report, the Candida Cleaner, that will be coming out in September. So you go to vitalitycapsules.com, click on About Me, and you'll see a box upper right corner, and you can enter your contact information, and you'll get notified of the release of the next edition, which is going to address a lot of questions that people had concerning the first edition. Okay, we have another question. Hi, you're on the air. Your name and question, please.
Hi, yeah, my name is Kathy. I'm just curious. I kind of probably have the same question about rheumatoid arthritis and Lyme disease. Do you
exactly.
feel that there's a connection there too?
Yeah, all the autoimmune diseases are, to my observation, if you look at the symptoms describing them, are variations of syphilis. If you look at this, you can Google syphilis symptoms and diagnosis, and only click on the .gov website. We just want the authoritative, you know, the real deal, establishment news, and read the symptoms, and it's considerable overlap. And so I would say anyone who has an autoimmune disease should definitely consider that what they really have is syphilis, and that the probable source, might be vaccination. I took the liberty of looking up some vaccine package inserts. And so there's one package insert for hepatitis B Recombivax. And the hepatitis B Recombivax package insert says, this vaccine has been reported to cause lupus and lupus-like symptoms. And so you have to ask yourself, what's in the vaccine? And that's what's got to be determined, what's really in these vaccines. I mean, I think people have, you know, written all kinds of stuff about what's in these vaccines, and I'm not sure where they're getting their information from, but I think certainly somebody needs to obtain a vial of this stuff and culture it up and find out what's really in it. And I think a lot of stuff is going to grow out of these vaccines if people will get them. Now, as a doctor, I could order vaccines, no problem. Right now, I'm not sure how a private citizen would get their hands on a vial of vaccine. But I'm sure some creative somebody could find a way. But I think that's what needs to be done, is to find out what's really in these vaccines and to determine, you know, what's going on. But certainly the disease classification has been fragmented and segmented by race, by income level, by living circumstances. So the same identical symptoms in a person who's black, oh, that's HIV. A person who's white and female, oh, that must be Lyme. You know, a person who's female and middle class, let's say you're black and middle class, oh, it must be lupus. So you have all of these different distinctions for essentially the same set of symptoms. And I think if we as a country or as citizens would drop these labels and just kind of share, Internet's a wonderful tool, share these symptoms, we could find a whole list of diseases that are essentially identical, appear in different groups and are treated differently with, of course, equally devastating results all the way around. So that's the deal. And, of course, next week's title, we'll send that out. Oh, next week's title is HPV, that's human papilloma wart virus, believed to be the cause of cervical cancer. So we're going to take a look at that virus and see how bad that baby really is and just break that down for you. All right, so we're going to see you again next week, same time. And in the meantime, check out vitalitycapsules.com, click on About Me, and get on the list to find out about the Candida Cleaner release in September. And also, when you get on the list, you get a free copy of a report, Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Wait a minute.